When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Australian Open Round 2 catch-up,
Rybakina out in a tiebreak epic to Blinkova,
Medvedev through after a 3am finish,
and Ondrejva announces herself against Ons Jabeur.
Kim, today is the 18th of January and we are here to catch up on round two of the Australian Open at Tennis Weekly HQ. I mean, what a day five we have just had. It was non-stop. It was never ending. And I actually thought at one point that Melbourne time zone was actually London time zone because it was just on throughout our whole day.
Yeah, it's still very good for European TV audiences that at the moment the Australian Open. I had it on to accompany my day at my, you know, day job, and I thought, oh, I'll have it on for like the morning, and then obviously the tennis will end. And but no, it kept on going. I had Daniil Medvedev on the telly till 4 o'clock in the afternoon here, so it very much has become yet again an all night their kind of sport, which is, I mean, we'll get onto it a bit later, but there's a lot of long matches today which obviously delayed proceedings, and so there's a lot to talk about because we had quite a few upsets and thrillers, so plenty to get our teeth into. But we do have to of course touch upon some very sad news that came out of the Australian Open yesterday. Many of our listeners will have already heard, especially if they're based in the UK, and you'll have seen this online on social media. And unfortunately we did get the sad news that the Daily Mail tennis correspondent Mike Dixon has unexpectedly passed away whilst out in Melbourne for the Australian Open. Came all of a sudden, just the news was announced yesterday, so we don't really have any details, but you know, our thoughts just with his family at this awful time. And just really, really sad. You know, he came on the podcast, didn't he, Joel, previously? We've met him in the press room. He was a lovely bloke, and yeah, he'll be very much missed in the world of tennis.
Absolutely. He, you know, was at all the events that we were at. He was very approachable and very accessible. He was very open to coming onto the podcast, and he treated the podcast and us very respectfully. And our thoughts and our prayers go out to his family at his time. And what I would say is just, I think, a testament to, you know, his prowess, I think, in the sport, and his reputation was just the outpouring of tributes from, you know, not just his work colleagues, but the whole tennis community, really, you know, fans as well, but also players. And, you know, to see that from British tennis players, as well as, you know, top players from all over the world, I think it was really kind of touching, just as proof of what a force he was in the tennis world.
Yeah, and see a lot of tributes from like the British tennis players and you know, other players online and social media. But also Iga Świątek, in her press conference, she acknowledged, you know, at the start, sent her condolences to the room. So that was a, you know, very, very thoughtful of her. And yeah, we'll be getting on to her on-court tennis today as well. But yeah, extremely sad news to hear. But you know, we do have tennis to discuss, Joel, and obviously that's what Mike spent his career doing. So we will get on to the tennis of today, because, well, if we don't start now, we might be here all night, like Daniil Medvedev.
We've got a lot of tennis on day five to cover, because it certainly is up there, I think, with one of the most memorable like days of a week one Grand Slam in quite a while, I would say, given, say, the upsets we had, the near upsets we had, the history that was made, and I say the near history that was made. I honestly thought that Medvedev and Rusevori were going to break the all-time record for late finish. So I was almost like a little bit disappointed, I think, in that bagel in the fifth set, because they were on for it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that when Medvedev went two sets down, he had blisters on his foot. I thought, oh, surely he's not going to come back from this. If he does, we're going to be here all night. And that, lo and behold, that's what happened. But for me, the highlight of the day was the Blinkova-Rybakina match. Not only was it an upset,
the match or the tiebreak?
Well, probably just the tiebreak, to be fair. I mean, yeah, the whole thing, I mean, even without the tiebreak, it would have been an upset. It would have been a talking point. Blinkova knocking out, you know, Rybakina, who seemed in amazing form when she won that Brisbane title a couple of weeks ago. Hasn't seemed so great since then. But yeah, Anna Blinkova, 6-4, 4-6, 7-6. The tiebreak was 22-20, the longest ever women's tiebreak in Grand Slam history. The longest I think the longest 10-point, you know, tiebreak we've ever had since this new match tiebreak was introduced. It just went on and on and on.
Are we putting it up there with Borg, McEnroe, the Rafa, Federer tiebreak in that fourth set at Wimbledon? Is it up there in those levels? Is that the realms we're putting it in?
I think if it was in a final, it's going to get more remembered than it probably will do.
Yes.
But because it was the second round, it's going to be just kind of in obscure tennis history. But I mean, they both had so many match points. Rybakina had 6. Blinkova finally won the match on her 10th match point. I mean, I thought once she'd lost a few match points and it went to a tiebreak, I thought, oh, Blinkova's going to be so disheartened that she couldn't get the job done. But, you know, to credit her, she kept on fighting. She kept on just playing with a lot of, you know, courage, like she said at the end, because she said she was just shaking, you know, trying to get the job done. And it was just, you know, it was real theatre, it was real drama. It was exactly what you kind of wanted from a, you know, third set, you know, going to the death tiebreak. And I mean, yeah, 30 minute tussle there was between the two of them, and just, yeah, ridiculous, but very enjoyable if you're, I don't know, a neutral watching that.
Yeah, certainly the tiebreak was a tiebreak. You had to earn it. Both players were not just giving up or letting kind of those match points get into their head, because they were hitting winners. They were forcing errors. It was just relentless at times. And I was very impressed with the level that Blinkova brought to the court, because, you know, she's a decent player. But, you know, that match against Rybakina was levels above anything I was kind of really expecting. I don't think, you know, Rybakina played a bad match, but I think Blinkova just came out, I think she felt very relaxed. You know, I've been reading about the fact that, you know, before she would almost kind of put too much pressure on her. She sort of saw herself as a perfectionist, and the fact that, you know, her mindset changed this season, it's become less of being a perfectionist and being more relaxed and, you know, almost kind of embracing a more, you know, casual, you know, laissez-faire attitude. And, you know, it's paying dividends. As I said, I think she plays with less pressure, and as a result, she's able to kind of reach places in her tennis game that I don't think she was able to reach before.
Yeah, I mean, they actually played only once before. I think it was when they were juniors, and Blinkova actually got the win then in a three-set match. But, you know, Blinkova coming into this, she hadn't won a match this year. I think she's had, you know, I definitely know she's you know, appeared on our radar before. She has won a WTA title, but a player that, yeah, on her day, clearly a bit of a danger woman. And, you know, Rybakina, not at her best, but Blinkova obviously having the biggest win of her career. I think, you know, this is something she said after that she will remember for the rest of her life, as one of her, you know, best moments. And I mean, just, you know, with the crowd going wild and in making history with this this tiebreak especially, it's just, you know, what a fantastic day for her to finally get the job done. I mean, it was going to be tough for whoever, you know, lost that match after putting in so much.
Definitely. And, you know, I think Rybakina will be disappointed, because, as I say, I think in that match, she was just quite inconsistent, you know, particularly on the forehand side. There were times where she was hitting some incredible forehands, but then at the same time, she was hitting some really ugly forehands as well. And I think that at the key moments, that really, really cost her. And, you know, I say Blinkova, although I think she was nervous and was shaking, and that was probably one of the reasons it took so many match points for her to get it done. I think it's incredible, it's incredible to have such a strong mental game that you almost play your better tennis from match point down than match point up.
Yeah, exactly. When you know, you're on the absolute limit. And, you know, I mean, Rebecca did so well to save so many match points, because I think she had saved about five before she even, you know, had her own. So she did well to hang in there until, you know, to take it as long as it did. But yeah, a really fantastic watch. And, you know, we almost, Joel, had another top seed out, though. Well, we did today. We've had Jessie Pegula out in straight sets to Clara Burrell. So not, you know, not in an epic fashion at all, just very regulation 6-4, 6-2. Clara Burrell, I think she's in new territory at a slam. She's not ever been in the third round now. She's never beaten a top 10 opponent. So this is definitely not an upset anyone would really have necessarily predicted.
Or the scoreline.
No, Pegula's normally so consistent at slams, but you know, she's reached the quarters here the last couple of years. But yeah, just not at the races today. She did withdraw from Adelaide last week with illness, so there seems to be maybe something going on. Not really sure, but I think that probably, you know, certainly didn't help her. And obviously Burrell played very well to get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, Burrell has pedigree from her junior days, but it has felt kind of a little bit that transition period from the juniors to the senior tour has taken her a little bit of time. And maybe, you know, this Australian Open is her moment where, you know, she can realize her potential and actually have the confidence that, yes, I was a very good junior and actually I can be a very good player on the senior tour as well. I do think Jessie Pegula, I think there were things going on there. I don't necessarily think she was 100%, because it just feels like such an out of the blue result. You know, not even that close when it comes to the scoreline, that I do think there are probably mitigating circumstances there. But you have to give a credit to Burrell, who, you know, she came on a court, she did her job, and now she's into the third round of a Grand Slam for the first time.
Yeah, so absolutely, you know, brilliant stuff for her. And, you know, this is actually quite an interesting section of the draw that she's in. She's opened up. She plays Ocean Dodan next. And then we've also got in this quarter, because Rebecca is out, we've got obviously Blinkova playing Paolini in the third round. Sloane Stephens also in that section. Chris will be happy with that. She's gradually coming her, you know, making her way through. She beat Kazatkina today, so a bit of an upset there.
She's had no form at the Australian Open over the last few years, and there's opportunity here for someone to go through to quarterfinal, semi-final, and it's just completely opened up, hasn't it, in this side of the draw. The only thing I'm a bit sad about is the fact that Emma Raducanu was in there.
Yeah, Emma Raducanu, we'll get on to her now, shall we? Because she did lose to Yafan Wong in three sets. It was pretty tough. I think Emma was not feeling her best. She said that she was being sick, essentially. But she wasn't going to give up, she said. She wasn't going to quit. And she fought valiantly, but lost in the third set to Wong, who, you know, was playing pretty good tennis, I thought. And unfortunately, Katie Poulter also losing to Chin Wen Zheng. So we don't have an all-British third round. We've got an all-Chinese third round instead.
Yeah, I mean, the Raducanu performance, it was, you know, it was good, but it also, I think, showed, you know, that she has been away from the tour, and that lack of match practice, that lack of match conditioning, I think it really did catch up to her in the third set, where, you know, she was calling the trainer, I think, at the start of that final set, you know, having to take a tablet. I almost think she was going to do a little bit of a Jack Draper, Kim, and throw up on the tennis court, because she did not look in a good way. But I was impressed with the fact that she, you know, she didn't retire. She saw it out. And what was incredible was that, even though I felt like her body was kind of failing her, or she wasn't feeling physically fit, the tennis was still really, really good. And she really, really did push Wong to you know, really rise above the threat and the challenge. You know, the crowd as well were all on Emma's side. So it was a very good tussle, and I think Raducanu's body maybe arguably let her down in that third set, but maybe not in the way that we thought. It wasn't like an injury, but more in a sort of just ran out of gas situation.
Yeah, but that will come with time. You know, she'll build up her resilience a bit more. And, you know, maybe there was kind of an illness element going on today as well. But yeah, unfortunately, no more Brits left in the women's singles. And we do only have the one Brit in the men's singles now because Cam Norrie is still in. He came back from two sets down to win today, but Draper did lose to Tommy Paul. So, yeah, collector set, another one has bitten the dust.
What's going on there? It was 6-4, 6-1. Like 10 days ago, I think, or a scoreline, something like that anyway. And now, yeah, losing in four sets. I mean, yeah, it was a tough old slog for Draper, who, you know, we saw that physical ailments he went through in his last match. And yeah, I still think it took a lot out of him playing, you know, playing the week before. And, you know, with the conditions the way they are in this Australian Open, I can't honestly think of how punishing they are. The heat, how slow the court is, the tennis balls as well. I think it's really taken it out of players. And if you are playing that week before and going deep, I certainly think that's been something that counts against you the longer you go in the tournament.
Yeah, and he has played a lot of tennis lately. I saw Jiří Lehečka also losing, so both of the finalists from last week out. But you know, that will come with time as well with Jack, like managing his schedule and the conditions. It comes a bit with experience. But yeah, one Brit remaining. Let's have a look though at the other potentially upset of the day. It didn't actually quite happen, but it was on the cards, or looking like it at one point. That was Iga Świątek against Danielle Collins, which we had earmarked as, you know, a bit of a popcorn match potentially, depending on what Danielle Collins turned up. You know, she's a former finalist here. She beat Świątek en route to making that final a couple of years ago, and she was actually 4-1 up in the third set, two games from victory against Świątek, before Świątek won the last five games on the trot to come back. Joel, what did you make of this? Did you think Iga was, you know, going out the tournament when you saw she was 4-1 down?
It certainly looked on the cards. And, you know, with the upsets that we've seen in the tournament so far, I wouldn't have, you know, put it past, you know, Danielle Collins coming through. I mean, she's had great history and memories at this tournament, but you know, Świątek at the moment, the streak that she is on, you know, she hasn't lost since September. She wasn't going to give that up very easily. And I think, you know, with Świątek, you just can never count her out regardless of the situation that she finds herself in, because of, you know, the stuff she does mentally. You know, having a psychologist in her team, she's just so strong and unflappable regardless of the situation that you put her in. And that was all to be seen, I think, in that third set, where, you know, Danielle Collins was, you know, she was two games away from you know, taking out the top seed and really opening up that top quarter. But yeah, Iga Świątek, very, very impressive. And I think it's a bit of a warning sign to the rest of the competition that it shows that, you know, with Świątek, regardless of what situation she is in, she can dig herself out.
Yeah, it's been very impressive that she's had two very tough opponents so far, and her draw is only going to stay that way. You know, she's got Linda Noskova next, who's very young and in form. After that, you know, it would be Ostapenko, Svitolina. So she's got, you know, the toughest draw. But actually, the advantage of that is you've got to be very tuned in, and she'll know that she's got difficult matches ahead. So actually that can almost be a benefit in the sense you don't go in sort of underestimating anyone. But yeah, she's now on an 18 match win streak. And I think the fact that she was able to come back, you know, she didn't let Collins get in her head. You know, she could quite well easily have thought, oh, I lost to Collins on the same court, you know, 2 years ago. But she was able to get the job done in a very methodical manner, to come back and defeat Collins after 3 hours.
I mean, Danielle Collins, Kim, has said that this is going to be her last season on the tour. Were you surprised when that announcement came out, or were you sort of like, that makes sense? What were the emotions going through when you heard that news break?
Yeah, I think yes and no. It doesn't surprise me. I think she's been on the tour a while, and, you know, sometimes players just reach that point where they want to do other things in their life and evolve away, as Serena once said. But I think she's also a player that I could see maybe coming back to the sport after a few years, as they, you know, sometimes do. But I think that's, you know, that's great if that's an option, and further down the line she does, then, you know, she's got the choice, I suppose. And I think if she's listening to what she wants to do, then we, you know, fully support that. But she will be missed, because she's a player that, you know, is always a good one to watch, especially with her kind of attitude on court and her fighting spirit. She's always a great one to have in the game, I think. Another player who does, you know, fight quite well on the court as well, Yelena Ostapenko. She's also still in. She beat Alia Tomljanovic 3 sets today. So she set up a third round with Victoria Azarenka, former champion, who also came through in 3 sets against Clara Tauson. So yeah, just a lot of like long sort of tussling matches today. Lots of ups and downs.
We've just had lots of matches that have gone to final set, I think, on the women's side and on the men's side, because, you know, we had, as you said, we had some battling wins for Ostapenko and Azarenka, but we also had a battling win for Daniil Medvedev, who had to come back from 2 sets down right on the brink against Emil Ruusuvuori and win in 5 at 03:40 local time. I mean, I always think it's asking for trouble when you put the, you know, the best of 5 men's match on last on the night schedule. You're always sort of tempting fate, but Daniil Medvedev was given an almighty scare, wasn't he?
Well, I think you're tempting fate even if you put like the, you know, best of 3 like women's match on last, because if the men's match previously goes to 5, then you've got the women's match starting at a ridiculously late time. So there's no winners from however way they schedule it if things go long. They just need to schedule things earlier or have like a curfew like Wimbledon does, or, you know, because Medvedev and Ruusuvuori stepped on court at 11:15 in the evening. So even if it was 3 straight sets, it would be unlikely they would, you know, have finished before like 1:30, which is just, you know, I know players get used to playing late, especially at the Australian Open, but it's just, you know, it does get a bit silly now, doesn't it? We see this so often, and this one almost went the distance like the Hewitt Bagdatis match from many moons ago, which was, I think, the latest finish still.
What's especially silly, I think, with this time round is the fact that, you know, they did a Sunday start, and they did that with the reason to help combat the scheduling, but we've not really seen any fruits of that. And, you know, we put a vote up on our Twitter profile: does the Australian Open have a scheduling problem? 80% of people said yes. Where do you stand on it? Do you think it's a scheduling issue? Do you think there are other things at play? What's your view?
Well, I think that Sunday start, I mean, it will have helped maybe for the first round schedule, but it has no impact for the schedule from the second round onwards. And I think really it's probably just because they wanted to maximize ticket sales and give people an extra day, a non-working day, you know, to enjoy the tennis. But yeah, I think they just need to start the night session earlier. You know, they've got 2 matches in the day session, and if they're over quite quickly, then there's a bit of a gap. It's like a wasted time on the court that could be used. And I know they've got to get the crowds in and out because it's 2 separate ticketed sessions. But I think maybe start all the sessions earlier, start the day session earlier, start the evening session earlier. But, you know, they have to think about TV audiences, you know, who's paying the big bucks to have the schedule that they want. You know, they are beholden to that, which I do understand. And, you know, Wimbledon have a curfew, of course, because of the local, I think, you know, residential restrictions. Could that be introduced, perhaps, something like that? But then obviously that wouldn't go down very well with European TV audiences. So you can't please everyone. Something's got to give, unfortunately. And today was, I guess, a bit of an exception that it went so late, because it did have the match between Rybakina and Blinkova before, which went almost 3 hours. And then that match had already been slightly delayed because of the Świątek and the Carlos Alcaraz match, which both went more than 3 hours as well. So I think, you know, it's not always going to be like this every day, is it?
I mean, I would add to that, you know, as much as I do think there is a scheduling issue there, I don't think it's the sole reason we're seeing such late finishes, because I banged on the drum about this in the round one pod, but the conditions, you know, how slow the courts are being, and, you know, I think the balls as well, and the atmosphere, I just think it's leading to these extended rallies, longer matches, And there's a part of me that wonders if, you know, the tournament organisers and Craig Tiley, they think, oh, extended rallies, that equals entertainment for crowds, and that's job done. But when reality, that actually means matches go on longer, the schedule goes into the, you know, the dark of the night, and, you know, we have these situations where, you know, the top players are playing in front of, you know, 20 people on Rod Laver Arena, and, you know, you've got ball kids as well, and all the officials still working at a time when they really shouldn't be.
Yeah, and I don't know where the kind of employment law comes into that, especially with when children are involved in that role, as whether they're volunteers. You know, I suppose they are volunteers, but yeah, I think they've got to have some kind of safeguarding in place, or, you know, just be very, very mindful of that impact on the, on, you know, like you say, all the people that are involved in a tennis match, not just the players or the fans. Why are matches going so late? You know, back in the day, they wouldn't have been going so long, so that schedule might have worked better, but you need to adapt for the climate and the times that we're in as well. I mean, one player that won't be featuring anymore, or even have the possibility of a night match, is Holger Rune. He lost in four sets today to Arthur Cazot, French wildcard, who many listeners...
He was playing a challenger last week. Playing a challenger in France last week. So an unbelievable story. I think I watched him in the grass court season last summer. I think he played Surbiton. I want to say he played Andy Murray, but I could be wrong. Quite interesting story, actually, because he's got one of the French reciprocal wildcards from Tennis Australia. And I think there's a general sort of resentment around these reciprocal wildcards and whether they should really still exist, because, you know, they're just given out. And I think the perception is like they're just given out to players who don't perform that well. And to give you an idea of that, you know, I was reading on social media, only one French reciprocal wildcard has ever got to, I think, the fourth round. Nicolas Escudet. Arthur Cazot has a chance to join him, but it just shows, you know, how this situation doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, it is quite rare, very rare indeed. And this was Arthur Cazot's first win over a top 10 player. I think,
sorry, Escudet since the third round is what I meant to say, not fourth round.
Yeah, I just think, you know, this is kind of Cazot's arrival, really, isn't it, onto the scene. I know you saw him on the grass last year, but
as I say, another junior player who you know, had a relatively decent, I think, junior career, and is now, you know, finding his feet, you know, on the senior circuit. And, you know, he's had a very good victory against Holger Rune. I think he played some exceptional tennis, and I think Rune maybe was a little bit hampered by injury. I saw him bring on the trainer for a knee injury, so I don't know if his movement was a little bit restricted. But yeah, Cazot making the most of the opportunities given to him, rightly or wrongly, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And you know, Holger Rune, what's going on with him though, Joel? You know, second round. You know, he's in the top 10 these days. He's a big name in the game. I don't know. He doesn't give me confidence in slams at the moment. I think you had him going to maybe the quarters, but what do you think he needs to do to stop losing to French wildcards going forwards?
I think he needs to, he needs to find more consistency, I think. And it's not just the big games against the big players. He needs to be able to perform in the early rounds as well. And I think we're seeing too few of these results where he's losing to these lower ranked opposition. And I don't know whether there's a little bit of kind of complacency there, or, you know, he just thinks he can walk on court and he can come through with a three set victory. But I think he needs to make sure that he kind of approaches Grand Slams, like, you know, one match at a time, and you know, not maybe to get too ahead of yourself, because, you know, in the press after his previous match, I think he said he was immune to the Netflix curse.
Maybe not.
Which has bitten him. Well, it's just bitten him on the bum, really. So, I think it's more just kind of handling the moment and not looking too far ahead. And I think that would, I think, help him. And I think he's got the setup in place. You know, he's got Boris Becker now on his team with, you know, all that experience he can bring to the table. So, it should be there, but it's just not, I guess, it's just not revealing itself, I feel, at the moment in his game on court.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at other top seeds, we could have had some other ones going out today. Casper Ruud and Sasha Zverev, they both came through in final set tiebreaks. Zverev against Lucas Klein and Ruud against Max Purcell, the Australian favourite. I mean, yeah, lots of last set tiebreaks today specifically. And yeah. I mean, Casper Ruud plays Cameron Norrie next. So I'm quite intrigued to see how Norrie can fare against him.
I mean, they'll both be thankful, I think, that they both had five set matches. And I wonder if that does favour Norrie, where you do think if they're both 100% fresh and they're playing their best tennis, you'd probably say Ruud is the favourite. But the fact is, because they've both had such, you know, quite long matches and, you know, time already on the court, it might be a situation that Norrie, oh yes, he has come through a five-set victory himself, but it might be an opportunity for him to exploit.
Yeah, let's hope so from the British perspective. Grigor Dimitrov, though, still going very well, you know, given his recent run of form, taking the Brisbane title, he came through in four sets against Kokkinakis, who obviously on these courts normally, you know, has all the crowd and has done, you know, quite well in the past. So Dimitrov is still going through. And just talking about, you know, the Australians, Aussie crowds, there's something new that's been introduced this year, Joel, on court six, specifically at Melbourne Park. It's becoming known as the party court because there's a corner of the stand that has a bar in it, and it's like people are allowed to sit there, have drinks, there's some music playing. What is going on with that? This is a new innovation, very much with fan experience in mind, but how is that impacting the players on this court?
Well, John Millman said it's a sign of the times, you know, seeing this sort of setup on the court. I think it's quite interesting, and it is innovative. It's not traditional, certainly, at a Grand Slam. I get the feeling that a lot of players hate it because it adds commotion, it's a distraction, and it's something they just don't want to deal with when they're on the tennis court. But I do think it's sort of maybe here to stay. You know, people want to be able to have a good time, relax in their own environment whilst watching the tennis. It's not just kind of like go to the bar at the back, have a drink, then step onto the court. People want to do both at the same time. And I think if you allow that, you can't tell them to be quiet or whatever it is. You just got to have to deal with their natural movements. And, you know, it's interesting to hear, you know, Craig Tiley says this is a situation that he could see potentially be rolled out, you know, as a blueprint on other courts. I feel like we're still in that kind of test phase, but yeah, it's certainly, I think, something that is attractive to the tournament organizers, but maybe to the players a lot less so.
Yeah, I personally, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, I'm not so sure I like that.
Are they
idea.
Serving, but Kim, if they're serving Hugo's at the bar, does that change your opinion?
Well, I know if it was Woo Woo's, then you'd be right on
Absolutely.
Court six. I think we sat on court six, Joel, back in like 2018, because when I saw the photo of where it is, I was like, oh, I know that court. And I'm sure we sat there in Collies watching.
I'm sure we did.
I think it might have been Fernando Verdasco or someone along those
lines. Was it not Salvatore Caruso versus Malet Yuziri? Because I feel like we would need a bar for that, let's be honest.
Oh, I hope Yuziri's not listening to this. I'm sure he isn't. Yeah, and also, I mean, I know Australian Open this year, you guys mentioned in the first podcast from your round one catch up about fans being let in, you know, all and sundry, not waiting for change of ends. I'm quite a traditionalist, so I felt like, oh, also a bit ambivalent about that, but yeah. You know,
they're not afraid to innovate, are they? And you know,
no,
some people are gonna like it, some people are gonna hate it. I think some stuff is gonna stick, but I think some stuff is also gonna get let go, so we'll just have to see, I guess, what comes back next year.
You don't know until you try. I think I like all that sort of stuff in the UTS, but I, you know, it's how much of that do you want to like merge together? But let's take a very quick break now, but do join us in the second half, where we'll be taking a look back on all of the action from day four at Melbourne Park, and we'll also be looking ahead to day six, as well as I'll be revealing my collector set player picks, so do not go anywhere.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly Podcast. And now we're going to move on to looking back at day four, which was Wednesday at the Australian Open. I think biggest result of the day was probably Mira Ondrejva pretty much trouncing on Shabor, a 6-love, 6-2. We know that Mira Ondrejva is a young rising talent, but I don't think anyone really expected this to be quite the scoreline that it was. Ondrejva just looked inferior in kind of all counts, didn't she, Joel?
I would say it was unexpectedly expected. Mira Ondrejva's been on the radar of ourselves over the last year or so. She's such a talented teenager, and it just felt like Ondrejva was there for the taking a little bit when this matchup came up for round two. And you look at some of the statistics coming out of it. I mean, Ondrejva hit 24 unforced errors, nearly double Ondrejva's total of 13. And Ondrejva was just very imperious on serve as well. She won 85% of her first serve points, only faced one break point in the match. I mean, you just got to look at that first set in terms of how dominant she can be on a tennis court. And to think that she's 16, that is a very frightening prospect, I think, particularly if you're like a top seed coming up against Ondrejva after this result. You've almost been given an eye opening into what she's capable of.
Yeah, I mean, we know that she's a real one to watch, but I think I was just so impressed with how she played. And she said that she finds Ons a big inspiration to her. And sometimes when players come up against people that they are kind of in awe of, they can choke a bit. But
freeze.
Obviously, it was far from that. Absolutely far from that. She just went out there. Played her best tennis, and Shabor wasn't at the races, I don't think. But I like you said, in theory, it's not an upset that she lost to Ondrejva. It's just, I think for me, it's just the manner of it. So well done, Ondrejva. She's through to fight another day, and another top seed who this time did make it through, but had a bit of a struggle, was also Novak Djokovic. Number one seed, looking for an 11th title.
He keeps struggling.
Another struggle, this time against Alexei Popperin. It was four sets in the end, and he also had a bit of an altercation with a fan during the match. So Djokovic getting a bit riled, and obviously having the crowd against him with Popperin being an Aussie. So, yeah, not really sure what to make of Djokovic. Is this just sort of a few early hiccups and he'll come through and peak when he needs to, or is this going to be a sign of maybe someone going to be able to get the better of him in a couple of rounds time?
Yeah, I mean, Alexei Popperin played a very, very good tennis match. Novak Djokovic wasn't really on form, and it did really hang, I think, in that third set tiebreak. And Djokovic was able to come through, but again, it wasn't calm waters. It was quite difficult watching him at times, and he almost needed that fan interaction to get him riled up to kind of energize him and show Popperin and show the crowd actually who's boss on the tennis court, because it did get quite heated. He said, "Come down and tell it to my face," like really aggressive language. But he felt like it was warranted given the heckling and the hoo-ha that was going on, which I guess is understandable. He's coming up against a home player here, and I just think you always know that the more you anger you anger the beast, you anger the wolf of Novak Djokovic, he's going to come out firing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having saved those
but
set
how many
points...
times have we how many times have we said that? I mean, do the crowd not learn?
Well, I know. Yeah, I think you know, heckling just it doesn't work. It's just gonna make Djokovic, you know, rise to the occasion more. And you know, when he came through that third set, save those set points, I think it was kind of inevitable that he would get the job done. It's just whether, you know, I know he in his first round, like he said, he wasn't feeling his best under the weather, that sort of thing. It's just whether, you know, that's going to last and if he's going to just find his groove. And I think he will get there. He's won this title too many times for me to think that this is too much to be worried about, to be honest.
Kim, I also got to say, I do have a confession to make. And I was watching this match with Nick Kyrgios on commentary, and I quite liked the insight and analysis Kyrgios was bringing to the mic. I thought he was very, very level-headed, surprisingly, but fascinating observations. And I didn't think I was going to like it, but it's one of those things where the more I kept listening, the more I was like, why is this guy hated so much?
You were agreeing with everything he said. No, I also was listening to Kyrgios commentate on Novak's first round. And yeah, I thought he was good. Like, I didn't know it was him at first. I thought, oh, this player sounds familiar. Well, you know, this commentator sounds familiar. It sounds like Nick Kyrgios, but I didn't realise he was commentating. And then I saw him in the booth after and I was like, oh, it was Kyrgios. So, yeah, I agree with you, though. I love it when, you know, ex/current players... like that have recently, you know, on the tour commentate, because I think they just give that extra level of fresh insight from what it is to be on the tour these days.
I hope he hasn't got the bug and is like sacks off tennis now and is like, I'm going to do commentary. But I certainly see it as a thing that he could do, you know, when the time comes that he does retire. I'd like to hear more of him. I don't know how our listeners feel about that. I feel like some people put the TV channel on mute, but yeah, I'd quite happily listen to him talk about all the Grand Slams. Get him
he's
at Wimbledon.
Not gonna,
will the BBC
gonna...
get him at Wimbledon? That's what I want to see.
I think so. I mean, he's a big selling point still, even in commentary. And
well, I hope he's at Wimbledon for other reasons, to be honest. But yes,
he's not going to misbehave on commentary, is he? So I think it's hopefully a safer bet for TV stations. Let's have a look at the other big storylines, though, from day four, one of which was Maria Sakkari losing in the second round to Alina Avanasyan. 6-4, 6-4, straight sets. Sakkari does not fare well at Grand Slam. She has had terrible results in slams since she made the US Open semi-final in 2021. Hasn't been to the quarterfinals or beyond, has only reached the fourth round once. Most of the rest of the results are like round one, round two, and yet she was seeded in the top 10 at all of those events. What is it that Maria Sakkari and a Grand Slam is just, they're just not compatible, Joel?
It's got to be a mental thing. I think she puts too much pressure on herself and expectation. You know, the fact that she is a top 10 seed, whether it gets into her head, because she's under delivering, and you know, it's not like her body is letting her down. You know, she's always in great physical shape. I can't say as well, like, she's coming up against, in those early rounds, players who, you know, are going in as favorite. I mean, she has to say she's like a top 10 seed. So I think it's certainly a mental thing. And I think it's similar things on the tour as well. I think, you know, particularly when she comes against lower ranked players, there's just something there that she feels like, oh my God, I've got to beat, I'm expected to beat this player. And it inhibits her from playing. And we've seen it time and time again, you know, at a Grand Slam. And it's frustrating because, you know, we've seen how good she is, you know, in that run to the US Open semi-finals back in 2021. She can put it together, but there just seems to be this massive blocker at the moment with lower ranked players in the early rounds.
Yeah, and another player I think that has a bit of a blocker at times is Caroline Garcia, who also lost in the second round to Magdalena Freck. It's so frustrating. You know, she beat Osaka round one, yet just lost in straight sets in you know, the second round to someone that, you know, on paper she should come through fairly okay if she'd beaten Osaka in the first round. But as we know, tennis doesn't always work that way.
I mean, you put me on the spot around on Maria Sakkari. I'm going to throw it back at you around Caroline Garcia. Mm. How can she go from playing lights out tennis against Naomi Osaka to losing to, you know, a decent player in you know, Magdalena Fresh, but a player that she's expected to beat and to beat comfortably?
Well, I think I know Garcia still gets very nervous at times, like, you know, those sort of topsy-turvy matches, tie breaks. Sometimes she just does not bring her best tennis when she needs to. Yet when she does, she can really like hone it in and perform, like we saw bits of it against Osaka. We saw when she's won the WTA finals. It's just frustrating that she's just not consistent with it. But fair credit to Freck, because Freck says that she has done a lot of work in the off season. She's become more aggressive, which we did see on the court. And I think, you know, she's probably a different player to where we might have seen her before. You know, she came through against Daria Saville in the first round, and Saville's actually been in good form of late as well. And I think that will have, you know, empowered her to kind of keep on going. So, but you know, this is a big lost opportunity for Garcia, because the third round opponent is Anastasia Zakharova. So that, you know, good prospects to make it into the second week, and Garcia will be upset that she hasn't been able to make the most of that opportunity. But it's an opportunity that perhaps Freck can now you know, make the most of, and we'll see her perhaps go deeper.
Yeah, and another player I would say who is in that category of very disappointing loss, Francis Tiafoe, lost to Thomas Machak in straight sets. Yeah, it's something not quite right with Tiafoe, I think, at the moment. Certainly over the last 2 months, I don't think he's been performing like as he should. And Kim, you'll like this. Thomas Machak, he lost in Adelaide first round qualifying 6-1, 6-1 to Alex Bolt, who was an alternate in the draw. He's now into the Australian Open main draw round 3. That's an incredible turnaround.
That just goes to show you can study like pre-tournament results
it goes
all
out
you
the
like,
window.
But
yes.
There's just sometimes it can be the complete opposite to what actually happens. But fair play to Thomas Machak. You know, he's gone deep for the first. Well, I say gone deep, but you know, round 3. That is going deep for players who've never been there before. Maybe he's the Czech player that was going to go.
Yeah, not Lehečka.
Into the second week. Not Lehečka. I meant Machak, of course. Seb Korda also through Anisimova, Badosa, they're names that we haven't seen an awful lot of lately because of injury and timeout. So
Anisimova
well.
And Badosa, I have been very impressed with, given, say, the injury troubles they've had, the time off court that they've had. I think there have been other comebacks that have been talked about more, like Naomi Osaka and Emma Raducanu. But we've got to remember there are other players who are making the road back from recovery, and Anisimova and Badosa are still in there, and they're playing some pretty good ball, I'd say.
And they play each other tomorrow, so that could be a cracker of a match. They're on the John Cain Arena, followed by Fritz and Marushan. I'm thinking, could Marushan go even further with another upset there? But we've also got in action tomorrow, let's have a look at the schedules. Rod Laver, we've got Sabalenka, Serenko, Van Ash against Tsitsipas, and then the night session is Djokovic, Echeverry, followed by Storm Hunter and Krejcikova. And then Margaret Court, we've got Sinner against Byers, Alicia Parks, who beat Leila Fernandez actually the other day, against Coco Gauff, with a night session of Haddad Maia, Timofeeva, and Korda, Rublev. Oh, do you think Korda's going to upset Rublev there?
That for me is the pick, I would say. And again, tempting fate having the, whatever matches in that final slot is tempting fate, but Korda, Rublev last on. Yes, please, I think for European viewers, because I think that could be a very quality match. And Rublev, he always starts the season very, very well. I've seen his win-loss record over the last handful of seasons has been very, very good at the start. And Korda, we know he's got good pedigree, got runs in the family. It's going to be a tough test.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see what Djokovic is going to bring tomorrow against Echeverry. Echeverry's been in good form, I think, coming through against obviously Andy Murray and Gail Monfils. So I'm curious because I feel like Echeverry slightly underestimated as an opponent. I think Djokovic will need to play solidly better to you know, want to get that one done quickly. I'm sure he won't want to be embroiled in a longer match again. But yeah, lots to be excited about tomorrow. Matt Norino also against Ben Shelton. I think the winner of that plays Djokovic. So Shelton, Djokovic looking further ahead might be quite exciting if they both get there. And then, yeah, before we finish, we've got a couple of bits, Joel. You've said to me that I need to announce my collector set predictions on air.
Yes. Well, me and Chris did the honours for ours in the round one episode. And so we feel like you need to do it as well. So it was Dimitrov, Draper, Alex de Minaur, Osaka, Raducanu and Svitolina. What were your player pick predictions?
So I had round four for Dimitrov, which is still on course for that. Round two for Draper, which I have got correct because he lost today. Quarterfinals for Alex de Minaur, so that's still on course. I had round three for Naomi Osaka, so that's gone. I've got that one wrong.
We were sort of gloating about that in our
episode.
Although you pulled it back because, as I see, you got the Draper point, and also,
well, I had Raducanu round one, but that's wrong as well. And Svitolina round four. So I've got three that are still on to be potentially correct. So we will see. But yeah, one right so far. But yeah, thanks to all our listeners for sending in all your, you know, predictions for Collector Set. We do have actually three players who are on three correct already. So special mention to Lynn Pin, Selina Haddad and David Blecher. Well done, because you're leading the way so far. So let's just see if you can maintain your lead as we go into the latter stages of the Australian Open.
Tasty, tasty. And before we do finish, Kim, one thing that's been breaking news over the last few days that we actually purposely held back on talking about in our round one episode, and it's to do with Rafael Nadal. Now, I don't know if you saw, but he has been announced as a Saudi Tennis Association ambassador. What were your views when this news broke? Because this to me feels very murky waters.
Yeah, I wasn't particularly enamoured when I heard the news. He has been accused, sad to say, of kind of participating in, I guess, what you'd call Saudi Arabia's sports washing. You know, they're spending a large sum of money on getting, you know, top global sports to locate in Saudi Arabia, you know, the football and having all the, you know, other tennis events there, like the Next Gen Finals, and we think that the WTA Finals at the end of this year may well be there. And now kind of having Rafa as like an ambassador for the Tennis Federation, I think obviously it's great for the Saudis that it's a big name, but how much have they paid to get Rafa there? I just hope that maybe with that fee, Rafa will obviously invest that into his academy, so there will be, you know, good to come of that, and it will be put to, you know, good productive uses. And I think, you know, I'm sure Rafa will have signed up with the best of intentions, you know, to help generate tennis in an area that doesn't really have a big history of the sport. You know, they're obviously trying to get involved, get a lot of Saudi players. You know, we don't have any of those, you know, big on the tour that we kind of follow or aware of, so I can see they've got this long-term vision, but and they're obviously using sport as a way of kind of developing aspects that are not currently that developed. But it's, yeah, from a sort of other side of it, it's, you know, what are they deflecting attention from? So you've got the human rights issues to consider as well. You know, is it rebranding? Is it, you know, a diversion tactic?
Is Rafa untouchable? It's tricky. Yeah, it's hard. But
on another note, yes, though, Rafa did host Roger Federer at his academy this week. I saw on Instagram photos of them together. So obviously, yeah, Federer visiting Rafa for maybe a bit of a Mallorcan sun. Who knows?
Well, that is very, very lovely. And what else is very, very lovely is that we have actually hit our crowdfund target of £2,000. We hit it, I think, over the last few days. So we just want to say a big thank you to everyone who has supported our crowdfund and reached into their pockets. We are genuinely over the moon with reaching our target. It's beyond our wildest dreams. I did not think we were going to get even close to reaching our target. So the fact that, you know, we have reached it, and I think we've gone beyond now, it's incredible. And that money is going to help us push the podcast on in 2024.
Yes, we have exceeded our target, which is brilliant news. And thank you so much to everyone who has donated. It's really incredibly generous of you. And yeah, that's fantastic to kind of start off the new season with that to help us. And there's also still time to vote for us in the Sports Podcast Awards. So the link to do that is just in the description. So if you do have a spare minute, not even that, then do click on that to help us out that way.
As Kim said, make sure to vote for us in the Sports Podcast Awards. We do want to go one better than last year. Voting is open for another 10 days now. So link is in the description. Very, very simple, very easy. So make sure you do that. But for now, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from the Australian Open. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. And our handle is at Tennis Weekly Pod. You can also purchase exclusive Tennis Weekly merchandise on our Etsy shop, etsy.com/shop/Tennis Weekly Podcast. So do check that out, as we've got some fun bits on there. And email the show if you'd like to get in touch as well, tennisweeklypod@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back on Saturday at Tennis Weekly HQ for our round 3 AO catch up. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.